Calvin, Donnell, Jennings, Mr. Plott, Mr. Katz. Welcome.
Good morning, judges.
I am Stephen Plott here for Mr. Jennings. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes.
All right, that'll be fine.
Thank you. Your Honor, this is your honors. This is a matter that involved a convenience store robbery where the individual came in wearing a mask that was comprised of a skull cap, some sunglasses, and a scarf over his face. He was wielding a knife. After he fled, a dog basically tracked him and found many items of these clothing laying in a field nearby, which were later identified at trial by the victim of the assailant. The salient pieces of evidence were a hoodie, jacket, a skull cap, the scarf, and the knife. DNA is really the only thing that ties my client to this particular case.
Does this case simply boil down to, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth here, I'm just trying to cut to the chase here. Does this boil down to, there's no question that the robber wore these items of clothing, or at least some of these items of clothing, and there's no question that at some point in time, we don't know when, your client wore some of these items of clothing. Is that what this case boils down to?
That's what it boils down to, Judge. That's exactly what it boils down to. May I amplify
your
response to that? So I guess what it really boils down to, was it reasonable for the jury? And I'm sort of trying to figure out what they were thinking. I did not try the matter. I was appointed subsequent to the trial. Was it a reasonable inference for the jury to presume that my client was wearing these clothes at the time of the robbery? Because essentially his DNA was in predominance on the skull cap and the scarf.
There was DNA evidence linking an unidentified person to both of those items of clothing, wasn't there?
Yes. Maybe numbers of people. I don't know if I'm not certain because.
But at least one other person.
At least one other person. So,
was there any testimony introduced by the Commonwealth that the unidentified individuals in the two items of clothing were different? That is, that it's not the same person in both items of clothing?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
And follow up on that, was there any evidence offered by the Commonwealth, I guess through the forensic scientists presumably, as to how long the DNA would have remained detectable on these items of clothing, given they're out in the elements in this wooded area?
No. There's no testimony, no expert testimony as to how it got there, when it got there, how long it had been there, at all. Just its mere existence is what is proven. And that's sort of the nub of my argument is it a reasonable inference for them to believe that my client was wearing this at the time of the crime? And I would say no. By analogy, if there had been two fingerprints on the knife, and one of them was my client's and one was somebody else's, we can get our heads around that because that just means that two people touched it. And we can't say when or how or why without more. And there is literally nothing more here. There's no identifying. My client is an African American. There was no identification of the race of the individual. There was the only identification of the individual was that he was tall and slim, I believe. Now, the jury was looking at my guy, but there's nothing on the record to show whether my guy was tall and slim.
Was there any evidence to establish the relevancy or the probative value of the fact that he was a major contributor to the DNA sample?
No, there was none that I can point to. And I don't believe there was any on brief by the Commonwealth. It's the mere existence. All I can think is that the jury said, well, it's in predominance here, or he's a major contributor on these two. Therefore, he must be the person that was wearing it at the time. That's really all this case boils down to. And that is not a reasonable inference from the evidence, given the complete lack of anything else pointing to my client and the fact that it could have, there's no indication of how it got there or when it got there. Or more specifically, that being the predominant DNA means that he must have worn it more recently. You couple that with the fact that it was, there's no there's nothing particularly pointing to my client, and where the items were found don't point to my client either. They were sort of distributed in a field. We don't even know where my client lives. I mean, they had the shoes. They didn't even prove that the shoe size was the same guys as was the same as my client, or that the jeans fit him. They didn't do anything other than rely on the DNA, and therefore that.
What about the knife? Was that a mixture also?
It was a 50-50 mixture. He was a contributor, but they couldn't say that it was that he had the predominant.
Well, we don't know from the record what that means, even if they're a major contributor. It just means there's more of his DNA than the other guy's DNA.
That's basically all it means. And I point out in my brief that it maybe he wore it more often. I mean, that's an equally reasonable hypothesis as to how it got there, why it was there in such quantities.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, you have plenty of time left in rebuttal, then. Mr. Katz?
That's always a bad sign when the appellant walks away with time on the clock.
May it please the Court, I'm Benjamin Katz, appearing on behalf of the Commonwealth. I appreciate the arguments of defense counsel, but I think it's important to recognize what that argument is. I mean, that's an assertion that there's an hypothesis of innocence in this case.
Well, the evidence is in equal poise.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, I would submit that it's not. The defendant has focused upon...
Why is it more likely that the defendant was wearing these at the time of the robbery than it is the other person was wearing them at the time of the robbery?
And I would answer Your Honor's question by formulating the response this way. The jury was invited to make that inference. The argument was asserted at trial. My client
would disclose... Well, that's the conclusion. I want to know the support for that conclusion. Why is this evidence not in equipoise?
Well, I would submit it is one circumstance of many circumstances that the jury was presented regarding this offense. And the jury was told, what you have here is clothing the client is linked to with no other evidence as to when. And the jury rejected that in the absence of any innocent explanation offered by the defendant explaining...
Well, you're asking the defendant to testify now.
I'm not. What I'm saying is there are a number of circumstances presented to the jury.
Well, besides the DNA, what circumstances point to this defendant as being the one who walked into that convenience store?
Well, linking him exactly, those are it. I will be candid with the court. But
see, the question was, this is why, you know, Judge Petty and I have, and Judge Atley, for that matter, have some familiarity with DNA evidence now. And it could be very valuable in some circumstances. And clearly, I think there's no question that the defendant and the appellant in this case wore these items of clothing and handled that knife at some point. The question is, do they inexorably show, or at least beyond a reasonable doubt, show that he was the one who wore them into the convenience store and carried the knife into the convenience store? Let me finish, because no one asked the scientist questions about how long the DNA would have persisted given the weather conditions and so forth. No one asked the scientist, you know, whether the same DNA, the unnamed DNA sources of DNA that were found on the other individuals had any of these items in common, so that you could formulate a inference that what are the odds of this particular individual wearing all of these items of clothing and handling this knife versus anybody else. Those questions could have been asked. They weren't.
Certainly.
And the scientist, I suspect, would have been capable of answering them, but wasn't ever asked. So, you know,
Your Honor,
that's what we got.
If I may respond, I think the question pending to this court is, can it be said that no rational fact finder would have concluded as this fact finder did? And what we have in this case is these items are recovered in a short amount of time after the robbery, such that the cash is not wet given the atmospheric conditions. We have the perpetrator heading off in a direction that's described by the victim. We have the dog following that same path, finding these items. We have the defendant's DNA on those items, and there's no evidence presented explaining...
But you also have someone else's DNA on those evidence.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, I would submit what we have, and granted, the term is not defined at trial, we have a major contributor to the scar.
It is defined at trial
because the
testimony is major DNA profile means that more DNA is present from that individual. That means he may have sneezed on the thing where the other person just wore it and sloughed off some cells.
What I understand that phrase permits is the manner of statistical analysis that the expert then engages in, and that's why that analysis is lacking for the knife, because they can't isolate a major contributor for the DNA that's found. They know his DNA is among many, but in the absence of identifying a major contributor, they can't give you the one in greater than 7.2 billion
analysis. What the scientist actually testified to, as far as statistics are concerned, is that the odds of the major contributor of the DNA on these items that she's identified as being the same as the known sample of the appellant in this case are approximately one in around 8 billion or so. That's what the testimony says, that and no more. So clearly, I think the only fair inference is that there's no reasonable question that the jury could not conclude from the evidence that he wore these items and handled that knife at some point. What's missing, and where I'm not sure reasonable inferences help the Commonwealth here, and maybe you can help us with this, is since the questions were never asked, what the odds are of all of these items being worn by him at some point other than or earlier than the time of the robbery, number one, and number two, what the odds are of him being the major contributor on those items where he was identified versus one or more of these other people being on all these items statistically. That question was never asked either. So again, I don't see how the case gets any better than the jury clearly could infer without a problem that the appellant in this case touched that knife and wore a couple of these items of clothing at some point in the past prior to this robbery. That doesn't necessarily get you to him wearing them and holding the knife at the time of the robbery.
And I understand the court's concern. And obviously the record could have been more fulsome in that regard. And the record is what it is, and it arrives here as it is. And what I would submit in response, and obviously I can't answer those questions because they weren't adduced at trial. I don't know the answer.
No, and I'm not beating you up, Mr. I mean, you work with what you got. I think the frustration we have, as especially given our former professors, Judge Petty and I, is that these questions could easily have been asked and answered. We know that from our own experience, and they were not.
But I think my response to the court's frustration in that regard, is that the question before you today is to analyze whether any rational fact finder could have reached the conclusion that the defendant committed this offense.
But how do you do that without filling in that missing piece?
And this is not an invitation to make the defendant testify, but the circumstances presented to the fact finder were his DNA is linked to these items, unquestionably involved in this offense at a time recently after the offense.
How do you know that it was recent?
Given the atmospheric conditions and the fact,
is there any testimony as to the length of time DNA remains on an item?
No, but I think it's a reasonable inference where the clothing is found shortly. We know the clothing is.
We don't know if the DNA is from fluids, body fluids, from cells, hair cells, sloughed off skin cells, or what. None of that was ever asked. You know, obviously, depending on what the nature of the DNA is, it's more or less likely given whatever weather conditions and other conditions. I mean, if it's rain or wind, maybe the skin cells, you know, none of this is developed in the record.
I understand, but if the court is going to take that position, aren't you looking at those facts in a light least favorable to the Commonwealth at this point?
Let me ask you about Mr. Plott.
Isn't that what we're saying?
No, not at all. I think the problem is you're asking us to draw an inference from evidence that I don't at least find in the record that basically the DNA was contributed by the appellant in this case a short time prior to this robbery occurring. And that's the fact that I don't see supported by the evidence in the record.
Let me be clearer then. I think the record is clear that the clothing is found a short time after the robbery.
Oh, I think it's found, but whether he contributed the DNA at that point.
There's no question that the clothing was worn by the robber.
Yes.
There's no question that the defendant at some point wore or came into contact with the clothing. The problem is, so did somebody else, and I can't figure out why it's more likely the defendant was the robber than the unknown person whose DNA was found there.
And I think my best response to the court's concern in that regard is to say, a fact finder, this fact finder in this case, viewing that evidence, their mind was led to the conclusion that it was this.
And
defendant.
I want to know why.
Well,
based on what?
My best answer is because there's no other innocent explanation offered.
That's like saying because the defendant was the one being tried. Mr. Plott had, I thought, a good analogy. Suppose the murder weapon, the gun, is found, and there are two fingerprints on the gun belonging to two different individuals. Which one are you going to pick to prosecute? Nothing else.
And I suppose for that analogy to be apt in this case, we would have to subtract the scarf and the cap and leave only the knife.
Why?
Because he's the major contributor to the scarf.
Suppose the gun has two fingerprints of one defendant and one fingerprint of another defendant. Which one are you going to pick to prosecute?
Your Honor, I would concede under those facts, then perhaps there'd be an issue for the Commonwealth. But again, I would make the point that these are not our facts.
We have a little more DNA from the defendant than we have from somebody else, but the evidence is uncontradicted. Multiple people wore the items of clothing and handled the knife.
I certainly understand the concerns of the court in this regard. I think my best answer to those concerns is that the fact finder's conclusion in this case was a reasonable inference given the evidence actually adduced at trial, and I don't have a better answer for why the Commonwealth
frankly, I'd be more inclined to agree with you if the prosecutor had bothered to elicit the fact that the, for example, the blue jeans that were found were the defendant's size, or the clothing, the scarf was consistent with other items that found in his closet or something. You know, we don't have any of that except that we know his DNA came in contact with it at some point. We don't know when. I mean, I think had the question been asked, I suspect, based on my own experience, the scientists would have been able to say, given the weather conditions, it's unlikely this DNA would have persisted for more than a matter of hours, frankly. But that question was never put to anybody.
And I think my only answer to that, Your Honor, would be leaving aside the way this evidence in this case in a vacuum could have been presented. I think the court is engaging in an analysis by which, if we systematically strip out what the fact finder could rely on, what is left
would you argue that if the other individual in there had been charged and prosecuted, that the evidence would be sufficient to say it's been identified? Would the evidence be sufficient to convict the other person?
Well, that would certainly be different evidence presented to the fact finder. I think that's the point I'm making. That none of that evidence was adduced.
But that's the problem. It's you've got two options, and they are equally as plausible that the defendant did it or the other person that wore the clothing did it, and nothing to break the tie.
I don't think it's fair to say that it is equally plausible because the jury was invited to make that inference and rejected it.
Based upon what? What is the tie-breaking piece of information presented to the jury other than he was a major contributor, which is meaningless?
I think if the defense hinged upon equal access to this clothing by some other person, it was incumbent upon the defense to adduce that evidence. I mean, that's not lessening the Commonwealth's burden. That's saying, if you're not, you can't convict me because here's this other person who could have also contributed to this. The jury didn't have that evidence, and for that reason,
they rejected
that hypothesis.
They had that evidence. The expert testified that some other person wore these clothes and handled that knife.
I understand your honest
concern. And the money question to me would be, was it the same unknown person in those three pieces of evidence? If it wasn't, then I think the jury could legitimately conclude must be the defendant then. But if without that evidence, I don't see how they reached that conclusion.
I understand your honest concern. All I would say is I think a rational fact finder could be led irresistibly to the conclusion that it had to be the defendant in the absence of any other person. And I understand the court's desire to have additional information to resolve this. Unfortunately, it wasn't presented.
It's not our desire. It's just an observation. I mean, you know, we the record is what the record is, and it's either enough or it's not enough. And we just
I would submit that it can't be said that no fact finder would reach this conclusion. And for I would assert that the evidence was sufficient, and I would ask you to affirm.
Thank you, Mr. Katz.
Thank you.
Mr. Plaza, anything you want to say?
Not unless the court has any questions.
Okay. Then we will come down.